You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start in Mexico City.
Just left.
All right, anybody remember the TV series Oz? It was an HBO show about a fictional prison, Oswald State Correctional Facility. It was the first one-hour dramatic series on a premium cable network. Oz premiered in 1997 and marked what would become the dramatic change in television. 2 years later, HBO rolled out The Sopranos, then came The Wire, Deadwood, and the next thing you know, there's a Game of Thrones. Showtime then joined the party, creating Dexter, Homeland, and Ray Donovan. FX made The Shield. AMC launched Mad Men and Breaking Bad. No one remembers Oz. It was gritty and ugly and hard to watch. It was a lot like last night's Monday Night Football game, Chiefs and Chargers. Kansas City won 24-17. No one is going to remember the game, but it was oh so significant for what it represented. We're living in the age of Lamar Jackson. Dual threat quarterbacks. The pure pocket quarterback is a dead man walking. Chargers quarterback Phillip Rivers walked the green mile last night. Kansas City strapped him in an electric chair and electrocuted him with four interceptions. Rivers is done, RIP, 25 years from now. Maybe the senior committee of the Hall of Fame will vote Father Phil into Canton. But more important and more telling than Rivers' performance was the performance of Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes. What was it? A month ago, Mahomes dislocated his knee on a quarterback sneak, and there he was last night running the ball for a career-high 59 yards and throwing for just 182. That was a light-skinned Lamar Jackson-esque performance. With receiver Tyreek Hill exiting the game with a hamstring injury, Mahomes targeted tight end Travis Kelce and running back LeSean McCoy on half of his 32 passing attempts. You know who else throws to his tight ends and running backs? Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. You know what other pocket quarterback is walking the green mile this season? Tom Brady.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I root against the Patriots, but I love and respect Brady. I'm not trying to disrespect the GOAT, and I get that at age 37 and 42, respectfully, Rivers and Brady are past their primes. But the pocket passer era is over. The football people who once preferred Joe Montana over John Elway or Tom Brady over Aaron Rodgers or Peyton Manning over Steve Young now want a quarterback with a little wiggle. Concerns about sustainability have taken a back seat to instant gratification. You can win right now with a quarterback who can get out of the pocket the way Elway, Rodgers, and Young could in their youth. Everybody wants a dash of Lamar in their offense. It's an extra dimension that troubles Bill Belichick and the Patriots. The goal for every team is to unseat the Patriots. You have a better chance of doing that with a quarterback who routinely goes off script with his legs. No one looks down on the running quarterback anymore. It's now preferred. It's like that bygone era when thickness was a red flag. Now it's the greenest light in America.
Ding, ding,
Instagram
ding.
Is powered by thickness. Doctors earn millions of dollars doing surgeries that give thickness to the needy.
He ain't lied.
Pour out some liquor for Phillip Rivers and all hell,
whew,
the thick QB. All right, joining the desk now, Fox Sports NFL analyst LeVar Arrington and Mark Schlereth. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
I know did squats right today, man. I'm working on that thickness.
I'm going to start with Marcellus because I know this is right up his alley. He's been talking about this all season. Is the pocket passer era over?
First, let me double tap that thickness right there. Get in trouble when I get home. But let's talk about the mindset and the desires of the mobile quarterback, the 2.0 quarterback. Yeah, it's over, pocket passers. The mindset in terms of resisting those mobile 2.0 quarterbacks is over. But the problem is, don't have the personnel necessary to do it. Think about this. This is a marketplace issue, a supply and demand issue. And because of all the years of resistance to quarterbacks who can maximize their attributes and actually run when the play breaks down, because of that climate, that resistance to that quarterback, you don't have the necessary supply and personnel to meet the demand. So what you're going to now look at is the collegiate ranks and those coaches at the youth level and high school level starting to say with an open mind, I don't have to put you into the cornerback, running back, receiver line. Do you have an arm, son? And if you do, now you're going to get that full opportunity without resistance to mature in that position. I've seen it on the youth level. LeVar is a high school coach. He's seen it as well. They're coming, but now they're going to come in droves. But pocket passers will still survive this transition, but their days are numbered.
Yeah, I don't think it's the end of the era, but I think your point is well taken.
Who's the next great pocket passer?
Well, here's the thing. You gotta understand what pocket passing is versus scrambling passers. You know, Lamar Jackson is a true running quarterback. He can run the ball, and that's not to take anything away from guys like a Russell Wilson, but those guys are scramblers.
They're dual threat.
Threat is different than the running quarterback.
No, I know. That's why in the essay I said dual threat versus pocket passer.
And so, to say pocket, there are some pocket passers that are mobile.
Who's next?
I'm not.
That's Mel Kiper's conversation.
Yeah, I'm not.
I'm saying look around the NFL. Dak Prescott can run. You look around the NFL. It's a bunch of guys that can run when necessary.
But there are mobile quarterbacks that are pocket passing quarterbacks. Even like you look, we've had the conversation about Tua and different, some of the guys that are coming out of the college ranks. They're able to run. They're mobile when they need to be mobile, but they are still rooted in being in the pocket and being able to deliver the ball. So.
Yeah, I think a dual threat quarterback is far different than just a pure running quarterback. Mm. Like I don't think the pocket passer is going to die by any stretch
Who's
of the imagination.
Because
Mahomes got 59 yards, do you consider him a running quarterback?
He can run when he wants to.
Certainly he can. Yep. John Elway could run when he wants to. There's a lot of guys that can run when they want to. Russell Wilson can. Russell Wilson eviscerates you from the pocket. That's what his number one priority is. So it's not like the pocket passer is going to die. Correct. What you have to understand about Lamar Jackson is this is an entirely different offense. They're running an offense that is one of one. This is the only offense like it in the National Football League. So you have created an entire different offense. I think the conversation is, do other NFL teams decide that this is a viable option? Because if you ask John Harbaugh, and I've asked him, is it sustainable? I don't know. Right?
Not enough.
I don't know. But the bottom line is this. He takes two or three shots that we'd like him not to take, but so do the dropback quarterbacks. And this guy, again, is one of the most dynamic athletes we have ever seen on the face of the planet. So I don't know how many guys you're going to get to be able to operate that, what they're doing, compared to being able to throw it from the pocket.
All I'm saying, a month ago, the whole, oh, my God, Patrick Mahomes dislocated his knee. We must sit him down until he's completely 1,000% healthy. And here we are 3 weeks later.
That was the voice we was using.
Yeah, that was the voice I heard. That's how I heard it.
Why? Right.
And so now I'm looking at him on Monday Night Football, just 3 weeks later, running the football 6 or 7 times. You cannot convince me that is not, as an organization, Andy Reid and them going, damn, you know what? We need a little bit of a dash of this if we're going to beat the Patriots and compete with the Patriots. This thing about can my quarterback be sustained is out the window. It's how can I get instant gratification and get me a Super Bowl? And if a running quarterback can do it, which it's an extra dimension, I think guys are going that direction.
Well, I think it's deeper than instant gratification. I think finally they're listening to their frontline soldiers and the head coaches of the world. If they ever walked into a defensive meeting, especially defensive line meeting, we were sitting there scratching our heads and dumbfounded when we heard guys want to stay in the pocket. When we see a scouting report and the guy is not taking full advantage of scrambling out the pocket when plays break down. So you ask the question, who's next in terms of just pure pocket passers? I have to look at the numbers, even if the names don't blow your mind, in terms of quarterback rating right now. In the top 10, there are three guys that may fit the pure pocket passer build. Kirk Cousins, Matthew Stafford, and Derek Carr.
Okay.
Now,
versus?
Seven guys who are certainly have the ability to run mobile 2.0.
And who would you rather? That list you just rattled off, Cousins, Stafford, and who was the third guy?
Derek Carr.
Derek Carr.
In the top 10, I'd take all three of those last. But this is to the point I've been saying, but it's just, I don't understand the resistance. I didn't understand the culture that said, don't maximize your attributes because of protection. As soon as you cross those white lines, I don't care what jersey number and what position you play, there's hell to pay. And now they're realizing, well, nah, let's go out there and maximize these guys, not to put them in harm's way, but just because they can get more for their
Mark, I heard you and Cowherd talking about this today, or I know Cowherd was, and I think he brought you into the conversation. The offensive line play isn't what it used to be because you are not allowed to practice.
Right.
And so some of this is just out of necessity.
Yeah.
You're not going to have the kind of protection in the pocket. You better have a quarterback that can move.
Part of it was always you are afforded protection in the pocket as the quarterback. Outside the pocket, you know, you guys are going to try to knock dudes' heads off. I mean, that's just the way it is. So that was part of the allure of having the pocket quarterback. But the problem is to me, I will tell you flat out, one of the hardest skills in the world, you think about playing offensive line. It is one of the most skilled positions in football. And think about this. We are the worst athletes on a football field. When you talk about position by position.
Well, in your case, Whit, yeah, right. That's true.
But look, I mean, think about it. I've seen corners transition to safety, safety to linebacker to D-tackle, or D-end, D-tackle to D-end to D-tackle. Offensive line, you're a fan. That's the next transition. Like, there's no, you can't go anywhere else, man.
Right?
And so you're the worst athletes on the football field. So when I am, every time I play, I am outmanned by you athletically.
Yep. Mm.
So from a skill standpoint, I have got to understand leverage. I've got to understand where my help comes from. Yeah. I've got to understand my footwork and my technique to stop you on a day-to-day basis. And now I don't get to ever practice it again. So from that standpoint, you're 100% correct. Here's the other thing that's interesting. You're at 5-year windows anyhow, right? You're in a so why are we obsessed? And this is where Baltimore is way ahead of the curve. Everything's a 5-year window anyhow. So why are we trying to find a quarterback for the next 20 years? They're just like, hey, man.
That's the obsession of traditional football. You want to have.
Sure.
Yeah, but
that's
the
ability.
Yeah, you want to have that franchise guy for years to come. But with that being said, I think you're hitting it right on the net. And it's funny because I know you're about to transition us into the next question. And it directly hits into that.
Well, to that point, one thing that what's an unintended positive consequence of the 2.0 quarterback is the running game, which is leading Baltimore in their drive to success. You can't defend 11 guys active in a running game. Mathematically, you're like, what do you do?
We got to move. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
And that, to me, is the secret sauce for unraveling Bill Belichick.
Great,
I think
segue.
The running quarterback is the secret sauce. And again, if I'm Andy Reid and the Chiefs, I've had a conversation with Patrick Mahomes, like, we got to have a little of this with your legs if we're going to do anything in the postseason if we see New England.
That's not the secret sauce. That is not it. That is not the kryptonite to Bill Belichick and their defense, because we've seen too many guys in the pocket dart them. If you want to ask any fan looking at the Patriots and say, what's been our kryptonite? Only one name comes to mind, Eli Manning. And Eli Manning couldn't move anywhere.
Luck in the Super Bowl.
Okay, you call it luck, but it happened twice. It happened a couple times. Luck is not striking that often. And then there are other guys, other memorable losses. I know we're all hanging our hats on to what we just saw with Lamar Jackson, but do you remember Joe Flacco? Do you remember Alex Smith, who has the ability to move but didn't move in that game, had 5 rushes for 3 yards and beat them 42-27. So the memorable losses, the big losses for the Patriots actually came from guys who just stood still and said, let me dart you. There is a way to beat Belichick, and there's also a way to run around and try to beat Belichick and improvise, but it happens both ways.
It's the line. The secret sauce to beating the New England Patriots is the offensive line or the defensive line. Those New York Giant teams that won, their defensive line dismantled the Patriots up front and did not give Tom Brady the opportunities to get to where he was trying to go. On the offensive side of the ball, it's amazing to say that they don't practice like they used to. They're not as equipped and skilled to block the way that they once blocked to create that pocket. Well, you know who's creating those lanes and creating that safety? The Ravens offensive line. You know if they're rated in the passing game? Number one. Yeah. They are the, by Pro Football Focus, they are the number one rated blocking unit in the National Football League. That's your secret sauce. You put that extra running back there that can actually throw the ball along with running the ball, now you're playing basketball.
Only thing I think y'all missing out on is Stephon Gilmore and Jason McCourty and their ability to shut down receivers one-on-one
for how
and
long?
Coverage.
Hey,
they
how
do
long?
It.
Hey,
what
for,
you,
well, it doesn't. It doesn't matter if you can run it. I think there's a couple. I think a couple things here with Baltimore. One, John Harbaugh is not walking over to Bill Belichick to get an autograph pregame. Okay, they're not intimidated. They are not intimidated by the New England Patriots. They're one of the few teams that says we don't care that you're the New England Patriots. So they're not intimidated by them. That's number one. Number two, when you break them down, you operate as an offense, split down the middle of the offensive football field from the center, right? You got number. 6 guys on one side, 5 guys on another. Yes, now all of a sudden they say, blue 80, said, huh. They start a receiver in motion, so they bring the receiver, the tight end, and now the tailback.
Get the numbers.
So you've got 5 guys on this side of the football field, and at one point it was 4-on-5, and now all of a sudden your quarterback's running, and it's 6-on-5 or 7-on-5.
Mark,
and they're eating people. I mean, they are eating people. They got 3 big tight ends. I call it heavy spread offense. It's one of the most amazing offenses I've watched. And then you flip side that they're like, okay, listen, we're going to eat up the clock. We're going to run the ball and eat up the clock. And we're going to force you to try to beat us throwing the football because you can't play the game that we play. And now what? Wink Martindale, their defense coordinator, says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm bringing pressure. Anytime there's anything going on, man, we're in 0 coverage. You block 6, we're bringing 7. You block 7, we'll bring 8. You block 5, we'll bring 6. You don't have an answer for us. And if we're going to lose, we're going to lose bloody in your nose. And we can live with that. And that's the Baltimore Ravens in a nutshell. Bottom line, they're phenomenal with what they do.
Did you know that as many as 7 of 10 adults wish they played a musical instrument? Unfortunately, many never do because they think it's either too late for them to start or too expensive. Musician is an online music education platform rethinking the way people learn music. It's the fun, easy, and affordable way to learn guitar, piano, bass, ukulele, or even singing. Just download the app to your desktop, tablet, or phone and start playing. Musician is perfect whether you're just starting out or have been playing for years. Enjoy thousands of popular songs and expertly crafted lessons and exercises across dozens of genres. Compared to private lessons, Musician is more affordable and lets you learn on your own schedule. You'll get bite-sized lessons, easy-to-follow instructions, and exercises tailored to your goals. Using Musician to learn an instrument like guitar or piano is much better than trying to teach yourself. So if you've been wanting to learn an instrument or simply want some help getting back to playing, check out Musician. You can get an extended 14-day free trial of their Premium Plus package at musician.com/play. That's unlimited lessons and unlimited songs on as many instruments as you want for 2 whole weeks. Just go to musician.com/play to start your free trial today.
Mark Schlereth is back with us. We're joined now by Fox College football analyst and former NFL star Reggie Bush. Time now for a big story. Let's move to the Patriots, who clearly need more weapons on offense after eking out a win in Philadelphia Sunday with just 17 points. Patriots fans' hopes for a Gronk comeback were dashed when the tight end's big announcement today was just about him hosting a Super Bowl party. Said he probably won't return this year. But another star might be trying to get back in the team's good graces with Antonio Brown tweeting today, quote,
Mr. Kraft, I apologize sincerely to you and your organization. All I wanted to be was an asset to the organization. Sorry for the bad media and the drama. Thank you sincerely, A.B. Mm. All right, Marcellus.
Mm-hmm.
You think A.B. is being sincere?
No, not at all. This doesn't move me. And if I'm Robert Kraft, I'm thinking the same. A.B., kick them rocks right there. You had your opportunity. And I tell you why. I'm going to make this binary because I think there are two sides to this conversation. And I'm tired of empowering the wrong side of the conversation. That side of the conversation is, you know what? In despair, when I have issues, I could do whatever I want without consequence. Oh, to wipe that clean, all I have to do is say I'm sorry later and all is well. I have a 4-year-old son, and I want him to understand the relationship between actions and consequences. And that's one of the teaching lessons that you have to go through when you talk about any level of life. Whatever your choice is, there's going to be consequences based on those choices. But what this does is going to give power to those sides, that side, and disempower the side who's walking that fine line. Whether you want to call it professionalism, respect, doing it the right way, understanding how to handle business, I want to empower them. And if you bring AB back into the fold saying he's sincere about this moment, I don't think you are.
You know, I think he, I don't know the best way to judge someone's, if they are sincere or not. Obviously, we can look at his past actions and we can say that because of this storm, this turmoil that he's created around his name, that it will lead you to believe that maybe he's not apologetic or maybe he's not as sincere. I do believe he's had time to think about what he's done. And I do believe he's had time to think about the amount of money he could be making right now that he's not making. And I think it's probably weighing on him, right? And being off this amount of time, we've seen him post. I've seen him post some pictures about other teams he's played on. Clearly, he misses the game. Clearly, right? And clearly, he wants to get back to playing football. So by that, I think he is sincere. But unfortunately, because of the storm that he's created that's come along with his name, it'd be hard for people to take him and take his words for being sincere.
I would say this. I would like him to tweet it. Because if you look at any of the other tweets, and then you look at that, he certainly didn't write that tweet. Okay? You look at the way he talks and the way he tweets and the way he, you know, the language that he uses.
That don't mean he didn't mean it, though.
Okay, well, if I send a proxy to apologize to you, mm-hmm. how much does that apology mean? Mm. It means nothing, right? If I'm going to apologize to you, Reggie, then I need to stand there and be man enough to say, man, I am sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Like from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah.
Not have my representative tell you that I'm sorry.
So you're saying he should have did a video?
Well, he should have done something, right?
As opposed to let
his own voice, as opposed to let his agents do it. I will tell you this. You are not a victim. You're a turd, right? All right. And until you own that, until you're willing to own that, and I mean own it, and that means you tweet it out, you put the video together. Yep. Don't let your representatives do it until you own it. Do I believe that all of a sudden you're a changed man? I know one thing. You're feeling it, because I agree with you. He misses it.
He's
one of the best in the world at what he does, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's not allowed to do it right now. So I get that part of it.
He's probably feeling it financially, too.
Yeah, no, he's definitely feeling it. Look, the NFL is a train that keeps moving and rolls on without you,
man.
And he's been left behind. Here's what would make it more sincere for me. If there had been a follow-up tweet, in addition, I would like to apologize to John Gruden and Mike Mayock and the Oakland Raiders organization.
Yeah. Yeah.
I made fools out of you all.
Yep.
Then there should have been another tweet. In addition, Mike Tomlin, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Rooney family, I owe you all an apology.
Mm.
If he there's so much he has to own that he, again, and this little, because again, I think this is a targeted message. He's looking at Tom Brady the same way I looked at Tom Brady yesterday. Tom Brady's thirsty. He wanted Gronk back. Gronk just said today, I'm not coming back year, maybe next year. So now AB's like, I might be the last resort. Let me try to make peace with the Patriots organization. Maybe Tom Brady will go in there and say, let's bring AB back. AB's not sincere because there's a whole laundry list of people, and we haven't even gotten to the young lady yet. that he owes her an apology for the text messages and all this other stuff. And there's such a long list. And so if I hear stories of other people that AB has wronged and said, you know what, AB reached out to me privately and apologized and tried to make things right, that's when I'll start buying the sincerity of this. It just doesn't. I agree with Mark. Mark's made a great point. He certainly didn't write this. This isn't in his voice. So I don't buy it.
And you don't think he wrote it using a semicolon? No, you know how many times I wrote a letter? I was like, man, this semicolon, I got to look it up. Do I put it right here or not? I'm not putting this down. You do not play with semicolons. That'll mess the whole article up. That said, that was a great point.
Y'all tough as nails.
No. But full contrition is to the conversation of sincerity.
Right.
And when you look at it, he's almost looking at the lowest hanging fruit of desperation, which is the Patriots in their receiving corps right now, and said, oh, y'all need something. And I got something. But that's not sincerity. So look, I am the public defender assigned to AB's case. Mm-hmm. I've been defending him more than anyone in the media. That said, I don't feel he's sincere in this moment. I think he's desperate. I think he may be lonely from the game, and he may have the quiet time to look around and see who's the thirstiest for his services. But that's not sincerity.
Well, I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers could use him too right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but injuries. He wants to win and wants to come back on a high-profile situation.
Yeah.
Look, now, having said everything that I said, I'm one of the most forgiving people on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he does move anywhere towards sincerity and the Patriots wanted to bring him back, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
He's because he's being punished. He's missed 8-9 games.
Mm.
You know, that's quite a punishment.
This is solitary confinement right now for him.
And so, I think to me, this is the first step of some steps the NFL has laid out for him. If you want to get back in our league, you're talking to Robert Kraft is one of our 31 partners, and you can't do this to him. Other owners are not good with it. They don't trust you. So this is a first step, but he's got about 25 more.
A first step, huh?
Yeah.
Pouring your heart out on keyboard, huh? That's the first step. Well, we got low-ass standards in this world now.
Whoa.
Oh! How many times I wrote a letter, I ain't mean it. No, and that's a letter. That took time. This is a tweet. This takes nothing.
You think this isn't something for AB, though? You got
this is all, a lot because
it's for whoever is working with AB. It was nothing to them, and it was something for AB's image. But here's the thing. We forget that the bureaucracy that's occurring, the slow play of handling AB, is also the same slow play that is helping Robert Kraft. Have we got to the bottom of what happened to Robert Kraft in the AFC Championship game, strip mall last year? We have not. So why would he bring a ticking time bomb back to his situation that detonated already on his soil? Think about it. Right now, Robert Kraft, his situation.
Tom Brady wants him to.
Well, look, somebody has a boss. And it ain't Robert Kraft. It was on ice, his whole situation. Yep. And it's still on ice. But then you bring AB back. Unfortunately, my heart is saying give him another chance, but I just know how this goes. If he, team failures, personal failures, the team doesn't live up to expectations, whatever it is, what detonates AB again?
This is why when he was 2-3 days away from a guaranteed contract, everybody is like, what the hell are you doing? Just shut up and be quiet, and you're gonna have $30 million in the bank.
Hey. Reggie Bush and LeVar Arrington are back. Let's move to college football, where Tua Tagovailoa's future is a lot murkier than it was last week after the Bama quarterback suffered a season-ending hip injury and underwent surgery. Tua came into the year as the likely number one pick in next year's NFL draft, but now Yahoo Sports is wondering if he should go back to school for another year, saying doubts about Tua's health could cost the quarterback nearly $20 million if he drops in the draft. Should Tua go back to Alabama for his senior season?
Man, only time he going back to Alabama is to make sure that U-Haul,
right.
Second floor up there, right there. That's where my dorm is. Get it all out. I'm never stepping foot on this field again. One, for whatever bad luck means, 3 surgeries in 2 years for free? Playing at the collegiate level when you have the highest collegiate passing efficiency rating in history? Have y'all seen this guy really throw? Like, we all have, but have we digested what that looks like? It lands between the numbers and it snuggles.
Every time.
Every
time.
Thank you, because you cover college football. It's every time. So for anyone out there saying he's going to drop in the draft, let me tell you something, Tua, from a former player, your money's in your second contract.
Yep.
You're going to go first round because they want the 5-year protection. And on top of that, if you go later in the first round, Lamar Jackson's sitting there like, hey, it worked out for me. I'm the MVP so far. You go to a better situation even if you go latter in the round. So Tua, only tell the U-Haul to go back to Alabama. You, take it to the NFL.
I think he just made all my points. He has no reason to go back to college football at this point. He is the most accurate quarterback right now coming out of college football. And he has the quickest release of any of the quarterbacks. That ball is not in his hands longer than a second, 2 seconds maximum. And you know GMs, coaches, executives, they're licking the chops to get their hands on this young man because he is a special talent. On top of that, he's the leader of the Alabama football team, the great Alabama with Nick Saban. So you know he's coached well, right? Mm-hmm. And you know he's coachable. But I just don't see why he should go back to college football. And on top of that, like you just said, this could work out in his favor because he goes to a team that's not as bad. When you're the top pick, you go to the worst team.
Yeah.
Miami Dolphins, Cincinnati Bengals. If he goes later in the round, he's going to go to a team that's ready to win, or they're just one piece away from ready to win.
I don't disagree with any of the points, but I'm going to just take a different perspective, a different angle on it. He will have had time to rehab and be healthy going into workouts and interviews with the NFL, but
not before the draft. He won't.
Well,
this sounds like a six, seven-month recovery.
Well, yep. Well, then, yep, then, dog. Then this even further makes my point. Then there, I don't think there's anything wrong with taking that extra year, which is a real year, taking that extra year to be able for yourself to mentally, emotionally prepare yourself to get back to playing at the level you played before you had this injury. I have no idea what type of impact this injury will have. It's very rare. I've heard of a hip being, you know, dislocated.
Bo Jackson. Bo Jackson's the only one. Well,
his is different than Bo's, okay. But let's go ahead.
So I'll say this, and you may have experienced it to a very certain high degree because you guys won a national championship, but where I came from and where I played, I never relived the experience and felt the experience of what, and I know money plays a part, but I never really experienced the joy and the amazingness of what the environment was when I played in college football once I left. And listen, aww. I know a lot of people make it about money. I understand that.
They do first.
And I get that.
Not us.
But in some instances, I could see Tua looking at getting healthy, making sure his mind is healthy, because a lot of times we look at you getting healthy as just your physical, but mentally having that opportunity in school, I think wouldn't be a bad idea.
Well, Tua's family is not wealthy by any stretch, so I think there is some financial pressure.
They haven't been wealthy all the way up to this point.
No question about it. No question about it. But I just think there's a little financial pressure. Only because you all have stated the other side so well, I'm going to play the other side as well and agree with LeVar to some degree about, look, man, Alabama is a very special football atmosphere and place. I'm concerned he's going to go into the draft and there could be the benefit of him falling down to a good organization.
Patriots.
But there could also be a bad team that's like, oh my God, the Patriots or somebody good is gonna get him and we're gonna regret this. So let me go ahead and continue to take him high. And then so you go to a bad team. If you go to a good team, they're gonna let you sit a year. There won't be any pressure to put you out on the field. You go to a bad team, a coach could be in trouble, pressure on the organization. Mm-hmm. We got to get him out there sooner rather than later. And to me, the upside to returning to Alabama I would just like to once see Tua make it through a football season without getting hurt.
You next.
Okay, well, look, I was in San Diego when Eli Manning was supposed to be my teammate. And there is a play there. If a bad team picks you, there is a play there. John Elway obviously comes to mind as well. That's one. Two, there's no upside on the field for him to go out there in terms of draft status, only for the psychological effects. Mentally, it feels better. I feel good. But
Let me ask you this, though.
Okay.
You still think right now he's the top five pick right now?
Top five, coming off this injury.
Yeah, top five pick.
No, he's not going to be probably top five. I think he drops. So and that, I think okay, that's okay.
So that's some...
Yeah, but that's still going to be more money for a team, for a family that maybe has no money. That's right. still going to be more than that. But yeah. it's not going to be what you thought pie in the sky. But that's coming.
Yep.
You tell that team, there are some terms in picking me. Or I will Eli Manning this. I need the red shirt. Two, if you don't agree to that, I need to go. And he has enough. This is, listen to 87 touchdowns, 11 picks in 24 games, and the most efficient passer ever. You're going back to play? There's no upside for you on that
free.
Field.
I still think that there has to be a focus on, and I've lived this and have watched it with so many young players, talented, gifted players. After an injury that takes place, there is no rehab and mental repair.
Yeah.
It's not taking place. And if there is one place where it would exist, where he would have a true opportunity to rehab, get healthy, and continue to hone his skills and improve himself, it's going to be going back to Alabama.
For free? He doesn't need to improve, though. This dude is already the top dog right now.
Improve in terms of his health and what that means moving
forward.
You
want to rehab just
you don't know
what
that,
to rehab?
You don't know what that looks like.
You want to rehab to free?
Listen, and I understand that, but I am coming from a perspective now, looking at it hindsight, retrospectively speaking. I honestly, if I could have gone back to school for my last year of school, I honestly would have gone
over
back.
The number and two I, overall pick?
I could have gone number one in the draft. They were doing contracts the night before when I came out. I had the opportunity to take a deal to go number one in the draft, and I did not do that. And I'm saying 1, 2, 3, or 4. If retrospectively speaking, for me, if I could do it all over again, I would have taken my last year of school, for certain.
Reggie Bush and LeVar Arrington are back with us. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, take it home. Take it away.
You all right with
it? Bring us home.
Bring us home.
He rapping.
I don't know what's going on. We're going to do something a little different today, y'all.
Yeah.
I grew up a big Survivor fan myself. I don't know if y'all fans.
Yeah. We're
going to play a little bit of Survivor Island. Let's take us to Carolina, where Panthers owner David Tepper says he won't accept mediocrity after his team got embarrassed by the Falcons Sunday. Tepper also said he won't make a decision on Cam Newton's future until the QB is healthy and wouldn't discuss Ron Rivera's future either. There's been a lot of talk that one of those guys won't beat her next year.
Mm.
So I want to know, who are you voting off Panthers Island? Cam Rivera.
I'm going to let you go.
I first?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. I don't want to pick like myself. I don't want to pick that. Boy, you better pick some. Okay. Ron Rivera. Damn, it's a hard choice. But let's be real about this. If I had to roll the dice on Cam Newton, that's a higher ceiling but a lower floor. But I'm in Vegas right now. I got to roll the dice. I got to say Cam Newton healthy out there will be more than a Ron Rivera who's kind of showed what kind of coach he is, which is a winning coach. But is he a Super Bowl winning coach? Whereas Cam Newton, you roll the dice, get him healthy, he's going to take you to the Super Bowl and possibly get you over the hump. Still a little more upside for Cam Newton. That's my choice.
I'm confused because last week we sat here and
how
expendable Cam Newton was.
Circumstances.
And your boy threw 4 interceptions.
Again.
And now we trying to play Survivor on TV.
Again.
So is he expendable? I'm choosing Ron Rivera. I'm going Ron Rivera.
Well, we together.
I still believe in Cam Newton. But long, long time ago, about a week ago, everybody was sitting up there trashing Cam Newon.
We weren't trashing him.
He's expendable.
The circumstances.
They win without him. Are they still winning?
No.
I might want to rethink that, Carolina.
I'm going Ron as well. I like Ron. He's a great man, but I think they've plateaued. I'm thinking that their last time they won their division was in 15.
Yeah.
So it's 5 years they're almost on of not making the playoffs. If I'm gonna get rid of Cam, I might as well start over with a new coach and let him make that decision.
Oh, so you kicking them both off the island?
I mean, I can take a vote that gets rid of all
my own
of them.
Island.
I can get rid of all of them because if I bring in look, I'm a new owner. Rivera is not my coach.
Oh.
So if I replace the coach, then I bring the coach in. He evaluates Cam, and if he feels good about it, keep him. If you don't, get rid of him.
Dips.
And then the island is all new and ready to go with something different.
I don't know if many of y'all have watched Survivor.
Yeah, I have.
Put that torch
Survivor.
Out.
I have, and that's why I'm voting Cam Newton off the island.
Why?
Because Cam Newton once off the island. Sometimes people quit on Survivor, like, this ain't for me. Eating snake meat and all whatever else out there. Right. This ain't for me. Peace out. Cam Newton, Carolina, it's over.
Is it?
If I'm Cam Newton, I want a fresh start. Mm. I don't want to deal with any of this baggage left over in Carolina. And so I'm voting Cam off because I want what's best for Cam. L.A. Chargers, maybe even Chicago Bears. Mm. Who knows? But Carolina, I look at their defense and say it's backing up. I look at, now I do like Christian McCaffrey. I like some of their young receivers. Nice. But to me, he's done all he can in Carolina. He needs a fresh start because, again, you bring in a new coach, eventually a new coach is going to want his own quarterback.
But you looked at a lot of things, but you didn't follow the money. Cam Newton is due only $19 million next year. So why get rid of him? That is discount bargain Costco rates for a quarterback. And who knows what you could get out of Cam Newton? You redshirt him this year. Don't come back with 5-5. Stop playing, hey, Cam. We ain't going to make playoffs.
Don't need
it. All right, go ahead. Heal up.
Toothpaste.
See you in the offseason.
Take the toothpaste. And
toothpaste.
How much is left?
How much is left? This is really the mayonnaise with a little water. Like, man, right. I got to make this work. And you just keep shaking it and see what happens next year.
You better
$19 million.
Put some water on it.
$19 million. I'm going to see.
I ain't never put no water in mayonnaise. I don't know what y'all talking about. That's disgusting.
See, Roger, your cereal.
Maybe
man.
In like...
Water in your cereal.
Water in your cereal. Reggie Boone.
We had milk,
bro. Californian, man.
No. Reggie was getting paid a lot earlier.
Right. That USC money.
We had milk.
USC. Fight.
That was a movie reference.
He's still mad about the pregame speech to Columbia.
Let's get back on the cereal. You don't think it would be better for Cam to play someplace else?
It could be. I think it could be at this point. Just looking at the amount of weapons that they do or don't have with Carolina. I think if he goes somewhere else, like you mentioned, the Chargers, ton of weapons. Mm. Chicago Bears, they got weapons as well and a really good defense. So I think it could work out in his favor.
The Redskins.
Don't go to the
Redskins. They have
weapons. Don't go to the Redskins.
They have weapons.
Oh, Darnell, you got something?
I got something. Reggie, your first point, I was going to go with Ron Rivera at first, uh-huh. but you got me thinking, I'm voting off Kyle Allen. He ain't even on the list. I made through four picks. Y'all been talking.
Thank you. They talking greasy about my dog.
I'm voting Kyle Allen off the island.
Kyle Allen ain't your guy, huh?
Look, nine interceptions the last four games.
Kyle Allen voted himself off the island Sunday. Late with that.
He didn't walk off.
He left Sunday.
Tua, don't come back to college.
It's Tuesday now.
All messed up.
Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, joined by Fox Sports NBA analyst Rick Bucher. Time now for the most fearless discussion of the day. All right, let's move to the NBA and LeBron James. In his 17th season, James is off to an incredible start. 13 games in, James's Lakers are tied with the Celtics for the league's best record, and James is the leading candidate for MVP. The news isn't so good for the league that showcases LeBron's talents. NBA television ratings continue their downward spiral from a season ago. Over the past 2 years, NBA ratings on TNT and ESPN have dropped a whopping 27%, when NFL ratings declined 3% in the initial aftermath of Colin Kaepernick's national anthem stunt, the mainstream media breathlessly reported on the demise of football. But so far, the sports media have mostly ignored the NBA's historic fall in relevancy. Yesterday, blogger Bobby Burak at The Big Lead wrote a piece titled, "There are obvious and alarming reasons NBA ratings are off to such a bad start." Burak blamed load management, which is star players strategically skipping games, for assisting fans in concluding the regular season is a waste of time. He also suggested that constant player free agent movement has undermined passion for the NBA. He made good points. I'm going to make a couple of more. Mm. Under Commissioner Adam Silver's direction and LeBron James's influence, the NBA has abandoned traditional American sports fans in an attempt to make the league more popular in China. Silver, James, and their puppet master Nike cast the NBA as revolutionary, political, anti-American. They did this to curry favor with the communist government in China. Nike's goal was to pressure the Trump administration to support the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership, which President Obama announced at the Nike headquarters in 2015. The NBA's goal was to land a record TV contract from China. The American sports media celebrated the NBA's communist pandering and far-left politics. From Steve Kerr to Greg Popovich to LeBron James, the NBA wrapped itself in political resistance to the absolute delight of woke media. It's bad business to be politically divisive, especially for a sports league. Hardcore sports fans love sports because they provide an escape from the buffoonery and dishonesty of politics. Despite what you're told on Twitter, LeBron James positioning himself as a political thought leader is a Saturday Night Live script that writes itself. Last week, former Miami Heat forward Chris Bosh compared LeBron to driving a Ferrari. Bosh said, James can drive you right off the road. That's what's happened to the NBA. Nike hopped behind the wheel of LeBron Ferrari and drove the NBA right off the road. Magic Johnson and Larry Bird elevated the NBA and passed it on to Michael Jordan, who carried the league even higher. LeBron's legacy is the opposite. From player movement to players as revolutionaries, LeBron has undermined the growth of the NBA here at home. It's a league with a brand built for popularity in communist China or in any country that hates American ideals. All right, guys, Marcellus, get us rolling. Mm. Is it fair for me to blame Nike and LeBron for poor NBA television ratings?
It's not fair. I think there's one more name missing from here, and this is the one I'm going to put the bullseye on. Unfortunately, somebody I truly respect, and it's Adam Silver. This is what happened to the NBA to me in the last couple of years. You're talking about the two-year drop in ratings up to 27%. For Adam Silver, he has the biggest market, and you're talking about it at our bottom line, in China and Nike and their dealings. And then he has his biggest star, and that's LeBron James. And he's sitting there holding these two huge entities, even though LeBron's just an individual. And then his sensibilities in talking about Adam Silver were actually curated on day one on the job when he landed, and what was on his lap? A race-related issue, racism with the Clippers. And he felt the love and the adoration because of his swift decision and harsh penalty. Kicked the owner out the league. And everyone said, And it woke up woke media, and it put the label on the NBA of being the woke league. What happens last year, December 2018, when Adam Silver's asked about being the woke NBA? He says, I didn't know we were given that designation, but I understand the sentiment, and we're proud of that. Now, let's go back to the origin of sports. Physically, we know what it is. It's supposed to be just guys and gals going out there and playing in this meritocracy, but the spirit of it is communal. Like, I don't ask you your tax returns. I don't ask you where you live. I don't ask you what your background is. Put your hand in the huddle, and let's play for something greater than all of us. When you lose your way in that spirit, and when you start to lean into things that people are trying to escape from when they're watching your product, sooner than later, they will become distracted, detached, and find other ways of entertainment. I think all of that in the recipe, Adam Silver, it landed on his lap. He ran with it. I think he ran a little too far.
Yeah, I'd say there's not any one thing that I would attribute the decline to. Look, parity doesn't work in the NBA. The fact that you don't have a super team for everybody to gun for is going to be a factor. You look at the stars that you do have that are drawing the most attention right now. They're not engaging stars. Kawhi Leonard, Giannis Antetokounmpo, James Harden. They don't capture the imagination. I agree that on some level, what has gone on politically, that fans look for an escape from politics and the outside noise when they go to sports, and the NBA has embraced being in that is having an effect. But don't judge the health of the league on the TV ratings or on the attendance. In the U.S., they protected the China market because the China market offers an audience that is bigger than what they have in the U.S. There's a certain faction of the U.S. NBA fan that you're always going to have.
I don't live there.
Understood.
Live in China.
Understood.
I don't care about China.
Understood. But the NBA does.
Yes.
Because it is a global league now. More than 25% of the players are international now. One of the most engaging up and coming is Luka Doncic. To me, he's one of the hopes of the future. But how does that resonate in the United States?
Right.
So they're looking at the big picture, and they always have. I learned this long ago, being in the NBA offices and going in and talking to Adam Silver when he wasn't the commissioner, when he was an underling. And they have a dozen or more revenue streams that they look at. And when they are attracting the fan that will never buy a league pass, that will never step into an arena, then they feel that they're being successful, because that's a market that's way beyond what they're appealing
to. As an American, should I feel good about the fact that I have a professional sports league that is catering to a foreign country, that's their end game? I don't feel good about that, because I feel like that's part of the reason why their politics have become so, and I'm just sorry, there are people that believe this, and I do as well. Their politics seem anti-American, and it's to please China and to make them more popular in China. I don't like that, and I don't think American sports fans like that. This is basketball. It was started here.
Yeah.
This in Naismith. It's supposed to be an American sport. This is upsetting to me, and I think American sports fans.
Understandable, but the reach of the NBA, the advantage that the NBA has over the NFL, over Major League Baseball, is that they are a global game. And so they're trying to take advantage of what their greatest reach is. The other part is, and Adam Silver admitted this last spring, their audience in the United States, the NBA owns more of the sports landscape than it ever has before. We talk about the NBA and what goes on in the NBA. Its presence on social media is greater than any other sport. But that is being driven by a fan base that doesn't actually watch the games, that doesn't watch TV. This young fan base is used to fantasy basketball. They're used to orchestrating things. They're more interested in where players are going than actually watching those players play in those particular places.
Well, that's interesting. One, I have to correct you. My wife, who's Canadian, will say
basketball was
created in
there.
Canada. They're going to come at you with that. I really think it's the climate. Look, the NBA, being progressive, has looked into gambling as a league and looked into other resources to try to make sure that they buffer whatever comes in terms of domestic issue with their product. As we all know, the gate attendance is not how you make your money. It's off of television revenue. And television revenue is not just domestic, as they were trying to work with China and protect those interests because of the huge market. But there's something to say about the sensibility of the league as they shifted. And when you talk about Adam Silver being the curator or the director of that shift, and also the embracing of LeBron and his legacy, I think LeBron made a calculated choice that, look, I'm going to get as close as I can to Michael Jordan on the court, but I'm going to add into my legacy something that Michael Jordan had as a wart to his legacy, which is being a part of the political climate, which is actually talking about issues, which is mixing a legacy of Muhammad Ali with a Michael Jordan to create LeBron, which can be greater because I can't be perfect like Jordan on the court, but I can bring in off the court greater than Jordan did and make something different. Now, there's a little combustion of those two ideals, and it's happening domestically. And China said, you have to stay on the shortest leash and best behavior, or else it will happen internationally. What is the NBA to do if they're losing it at home and then China has them on that short leash? How will this end?
Yeah, well, that's the difficulty, because Adam Silver's got to walk that line between those two. And I do not envy him trying to figure out how he does
that. I'm going to say the other point of this, though, is that LeBron, as an ambassador for Nike, has coming up woefully short from Michael Jordan. It's not even close. Michael Jordan, at 56 years old or whatever he is, still is a better brand endorser for Nike. He hasn't played in 20 years virtually, and he still will move more shoes than LeBron James. And that's because, whether we like it or not, or whether the woke media likes it or not, Michael Jordan attached himself to traditional sports values. He was clean cut. He was non-tatted. He played to the biggest audience in America, and it made him a huge international star that he's selling more shoes in America, in China, anywhere. This is where I think the NBA has gotten off course and Nike's gotten off course, pandering to China. You're better off pandering to our values and our fan base and let China fall in behind that than going this other direction, irritating your own fan base. And as Marcellus has pointed out, now you're dealing with a country that has you on the shortest leash in the world. You can't tweet what you actually think.
Right.
Unreal.
And so unreal. I just think the NBA is in a dangerous place. It infuriates me that no one in the media will talk about this. If the NFL ratings drop 2%, it's an apocalypse. And the NFL's dying and I can't wait for it to die. 27% drop, and we're at nothing to see here, nothing to talk about, guys.
Yeah.
The NBA is the great, and LeBron James is Muhammad Ali. No, Muhammad Ali, I say it many, many times, attached to a black religious organization, he was controlled. LeBron James is attached to Nike and China. That's far different than the Nation of Islam.
Well, let's be clear. The being woke and how LeBron has tried to be involved in social issues, he hasn't been consistent. It's not like he's been great at it. He's been all over the place, and so I don't know how effective that has been. I agree with you in this regard, that the league is running a risk, whether it's appealing to the sports fan or it's appealing to the basketball fan. It feels as if they're losing sight of the importance of the game itself. It feels as if the game is being tricked up in a multitude of ways. Mm. I got to tell you, this straight line shooting 53s a game, you know, people have been watching basketball for a long time. It's boring. It's not. It becomes just too easy to watch
It's non-creative.
The highlights,
it's not creative.
Exactly. It's not an engaging form.
Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, they all played, they all had their unique style.
Right.
And when you turned on, it's like almost Dominique Wilkins, who I couldn't stand, he had a unique style.
Right. And we
all the creativity is being LeBron plays bully ball, which is not really fun to watch. He runs over and barrels into people, and everybody else jacks up threes.
Yeah. You know what's interesting about sports? I take my two first attributes in terms of what I internalize from the game. And I'm just going to expound on this, and I think it's the same in NBA, and I think it's the same in all sports. One, you want to play with a team or even individually for something greater than yourself, greater than your own selfish ambitions. So let's collectively do something. And we bring us all together. Community comes to mind. Mm. But secondly, for those who are watching us, they want to live vicariously through us, but in a daring sense, dangerously. Like, you can do something I can't do, so I root for you to do it because I know damn well I can't do it. And I'm telling you right now, jacking up 53s a game is not something that makes me think I can't go out there and do it.
Right.
And that's what's really undermining some of the purists that are watching the game.
Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington's back with us. Let's move to Dallas, where people are singing Dak Prescott's praises after a monster game against the Detroit Lions Sunday. Dak has been putting up big numbers this year at the expense of Ezekiel Elliott and the run game, whose numbers are way down, but Hall of Famer LaDainian Tomlinson just raised an interesting theory about Dak's rise on Undisputed yesterday.
Anytime you have a young quarterback, you got a young offense coordinator, you're going to want to try to uplift that young quarterback to be in the MVP race, right?
Okay.
And so naturally, you're not going to run the ball as much as you used to.
You buying this?
Not for the same reasons, but I'm going to probably go to the same place. We all know incentives shape behavior. So if you're any offensive coordinator out there, you're incentivized to highlight the passing game in a passing league because on your resume, if you have a tremendous passer, it will help advance you up the ranks. Having a tremendous running back, which is a position that's devalued, guess what? It's going to be devalued even on your resume. So you walk up into an owner's meeting with a head coach opportunity and you sit there talking about your running game. Even the owner is going to say, okay.
Unless you're talking about Lamar, you're right.
Yeah, but if you're talking about a quarterback,
yeah.
Now you got my attention. So I think his incentives
are shaping his behavior on top of Dak Prescott showed up this year and Ezekiel didn't. When, hey, you can't be the teacher's favorite student if you ain't in class, brother. You in Cabo. Guess what? All right, Dak, I've been in the quarterback room with you. I'm your former teammate. And now I'm actually coaching you? Well, let's do this until Zeke figures this out. So I think it's really just a lot of coincidences, as well as, let's be real, he's following the path of success, and Dak is going to lead him there.
This is a classic case of a quarterback having to prove that you have to come back to you have to make it a point for him to hand the ball off versus throwing it. Early on in the season, they were giving Zeke the ball, and these defenses were prepared to stop Zeke, whether it was because he wasn't in camp, his wind, whatever it was, they were shutting Zeke down, and that was leading to them losing games. I made the stat the other day. This is the third time they've gone 40-plus throws with Dak in this situation, and they've only done that four times ever in his entire career. So they're trying to win games with Dak's arms, and I don't think it's truly based upon trying to put him in the MVP race. I think these defenses are making it so the game has to be won with Dak's arm versus Zeke's legs.
Why couldn't it be the Cowboys' offensive line and Zeke Elliott are making it that Dak has to win these games? That's what I think I see. I see an ineffective Ezekiel Elliott, and I see an elite offensive line that's come back a little bit.
Yeah.
And I see a team that, again, I can't see the difference between Tony Pollard and Zeke and from the running back position in terms of effectiveness. And sometimes I think Pollard's got a little bit better vision than Zeke this year. To me, Zeke crossed the finish line. He got his contract. Dak doesn't have his contract. He hasn't crossed the finish line. Kellen Moore is being smart. There's one guy out here that's extra hungry, extra motivated. Our offensive line's not doing what it used to do. I have to go with Dak Prescott. They have no other choice. He's been their only reliable option in their victories.
Yeah, I want to clarify that the Dallas Cowboys won their first three games.
Yep. Sure.
And in those first three games, Zeke had 55 carries for 289 yards. Then they lost their next three games. 58 carries, same amount of carries,
but
basically.
No yards.
But 202 yards. So this is something that you got to go layer two when you talk about physical response to a layoff. When you're gone from a situation, usually we always traditionally hear about you're going to pull your hamstring soon you come back if you're not in football shape. Or, and this is the alternative, we're seeing it right now, or you can come back full of like the excitement and the conditioning, but guess what? You don't have a second verse. You're gonna tap out soon. Ezekiel's effectiveness has now hit a wall. And that's a part of conditioning. We always talk about, oh, if you come back, you're not gonna be able to start well. How about you won't be able to finish what you started? And I think Ezekiel right now went through that slump, and now if you look at his numbers, they're roller coastering. So this is a guy that, because of the lack of conditioning, I think that even the game plan is starting to adjust. So why not rely on Dak? This is the best version of Dak we've ever seen using his arm, and just try and see how we can stabilize.
I'm going to stick with, as long as Dak can win the game with his arm and make it difficult to just play against the pass, the run will open up for him.
Yeah.
Well, Dak's about to get tested this Sunday. He's finally, you know, he's going to play the Patriots defense.
England.
And look, it's been great what Dak has done. But I want to see him pass this test because we've extended the MVP conversation so far that somehow Dak's involved.
Well,
I don't know. Yeah, I know. And now
I'm
LaDainian Tomlinson has. Yeah. And I've read other stories of people bringing Dak into the MVP. And it's kind of far-fetched to me.
Really? Now, second in touchdown passes, lead the league
in
yards?
6-4.
Oh, wait a minute. I got to do my part before we can do ours, right? And second in the league in touchdown passes and leading the league in yards?
He's not close to Lamar or Russell Wilson.
But
it's not even the same plan.
Conversation. Because it's fluid.
Again, y'all expanding the conversation to levels like, oh, my God.
Hold on. when Aaron Rodgers was inserted into it, it wasn't a resistance to him being in it.
I didn't
and
like
realistically.
It. But I didn't like it, but his team's 8-1 or something like that. Uncle Jimmy's off today. We'll get our approval ratings in a minute, but let's return to Phillip Rivers, who threw away any chance the Chargers had to steal a win from the Chiefs in Mexico City last night with four interceptions, including a crucial red zone pick that sealed the game. Marcellus.
Yes, sir.
You think Father Phil is done as a starting quarterback?
Father Time is knocking on Father Phil's door. Can I answer this by giving you my evidence and then give you my conclusion? One, it's amazing in sports culture now with Cam Newton. We use the 8-game sample size to say, look, Cam, it's time. It's over. It's time to move on. And now we have reduced that 8 games to 2 games with Phillip Rivers in terms of 7 interceptions. Lack of mobility comes into conversation. Tyrod Taylor, a 2.0 quarterback who is conservative with the ball but doesn't turn it over. So there is internal conversation around, can we move Phillip Rivers? The biggest incentive is the money. He's in the contract year at 37 years old. This is the perfect insertion point to depart from Phillip Rivers. So my conclusion is, I think it's over for Phillip. I think they're going to try to move on. Damn it! And I got my season tickets for next year. Thinking Phillip, my quarterback.
Father Phil needs to go and be a stay-at-home dad.
Oh, don't do that.
It's done for
Father Phil. Nine kids. He ain't staying home.
All right, let's get to our approval rating.
I think.
Big drop-off, 18-point drop-off from the last time I did Father Phil. I got him down to a 6 in job performance. Just too many INTs.
Mm.
Everything else pretty much stays the same. 61 role player.
Oh, man. Higher than that. Look, he had 2 bad games, and it's been a roller coaster season. Last year, tremendous year. So I think they'll bring him back in a reduced set to try and let him go out there and fight for it, but only a job performance falls for me. Everything else is still good.
You think I was hard on him. The internet has him as a dumpster fire.
Prisoners of the
43%.